95 FM.
It is 9:07. If you're just heading out, the snow is falling, the roads are slippery, just be careful. That ambulance ride under the new budget will cost you 6% more in taxes, so just be careful, you don't want to do it. In no way, shape, or form does this song apply to our current guest. He's married to a very beautiful woman. We're broadcasting live from the RowAutoGroup.com studio. Don't forget, our McDuddy's Hearth and Home text line is 207-409-6172. You can find out more at stovesofmaine.com. Steve Gruber is joining us. He's on 747,000 stations in Michigan. And he also does, is it One American News, Real American News? I can't get it right, Steve.
R-A-V. Real America's Voice.
Wow.
R-A-V. You got it.
Yeah, we're close. We're hanging in there. How are you?
I'm good. In fact, I am on 734,000 stations in Michigan. In fact, I am the only thing you can hear in Michigan. No music, no, just me. It's Gruber all the time.
I love that. I wish we had that in Maine. I love that.
Well, okay, then give me your slot, and then it can be Gruber all the time.
Well, you know, if somebody does a buyout for me, like the president did with the federal employees, that could happen.
Yeah, can you know? And they're all complaining. Look, go to work or go home. And if you don't want to go to work, here's a check for 8 months. I mean, it's not a bad deal, I don't think.
No, it's a good deal. And I just had Christian Daytalk on from the Washington Examiner, who was there yesterday in the press briefing room, and we talked about it, and he feels like this is very much an olive branch by the president to say to these folks, if you don't want to come back to work, that's fine. We're not going to just put you on the food lines. Here's an opportunity by February 6th to take a buyout and go find a new career.
Here's a new career opportunity designed just for you. You can either come to work or get the hell out. It's pretty simple, really. I mean, come on.
All right, I want to talk to you about what has been one of my favorite subjects today, and that is the astoundingly fierce, bold, brilliant, articulate Caroline Leavitt.
Absolutely spectacular. A star is born. I mean,
amen.
Really.
Amen.
It was, look, and I don't mean to hurt the feelings of one Sean Spicer, who was the first to try that job 8 years ago for President Donald Trump.
Right.
Who was not strong. Unfortunately for Sean, when they rolled him out the first time he came to a podium, Sean's not a tall man, and they put him at a podium for a very tall person, so it looked like his chin was resting on the podium, first of all. It was a terrible look. And so you compare and contrast that to a rock star performance from Caroline Leavitt, the blonde-haired, blue-eyed pit bull that came out from behind the curtain yesterday and took all comers, and I thought it was spectacular because they kept trying to come back to, well, if you're in the country and you're not a criminal, if you're in the country, you are a criminal. She kept having to point out to people like Peter Alexander from NBC, who she schooled, among others. He got a good schooling there. In fact, I played it on my program this morning because it was so delightful, I think. And no, she was terrific. Look, fearless, on the money, didn't have a notebook or a folder or anything. She just went out there and answered the question. She had a couple of notes. I mean, why wouldn't you? You got to remember some things and have a couple of names or facts or figures written down. But other than that, she just did it. Very well prepped, by the way. I don't know if she got prepping from, you know, the best in the business prior to her, in my estimation, was Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
Amen.
Masterclass,
yes.
Right? And so maybe because obviously Sarah and the president remain close to this day, maybe there were some get-togethers, some trainings or something, because she performed flawlessly, honestly. I mean, I'd give it 10 out of 10. Her first time out, and then I saw her again this morning talking about some things as a camera was passing by. I didn't check in on to it much, but it was Caroline knocked it out of the park. Let's just be that simple about it.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I want to go back to what you said about Sean Spicer. I asked Sean. Sean's a great communicator. He has a wonderful show. He had it on Newsmax, and now he has SeanSpicer.com. And he does a really good job. He's a great communicator. And I said to him, Sean, you never looked comfortable in the job. And this is what he said. He said, you know, I got to be honest with you. I knew they were going to come at me, but I never expected them to do what they did. I've known most of those people for 20 years. And he said, the part that was hard for me was we'd go out there and we'd go at it, and they would beat the hell out of me. And then they'd drop by my office 10 minutes later and say, hey, bud, look, I know we're friends. That's just what the network wants me to do. And he did say on these airwaves that he was surprised that they would be that duplicitous. But Caroline came out. You may be right about Sarah. I'm not sure about that. I've known her for a long time. She has always been this fierce. And she worked in the White House press office the first time around under Kayleigh. So she had some training there as well. But the thing that I've always known about her, and whenever she's been on this show, I don't know, 50 or 100 times over the years, man, she is direct. She looks you in the eye. And that's, you know, that was the difference between KGP and her. KGP would blink incessantly and never look the reporter in the eye. She looked right at him, which is often disarming for a lot of people. They don't like to be stared at. She would look right at him when she answered the question. She never blinked. She never equivocated. She never said, And you're right, she referred to notes, but both of those were executive orders that had come out or memorandums where she needed to read official language and be precise. I agree. She did not have some big binder there because she didn't know what was going on. I think part of that, and Christian Daytalk from the Washington Examiner was on in the last segment, I think part of it is that the president reads her into this, so she knows what she's talking about.
I completely agree. She was completely knowledgeable, and she had some notes in front of her, which is perfectly fine. Look, you can be asked 1,000 different things, and I like the part where she came back and said, look, the Biden administration killed 100 million chickens because they had the flu.
Right.
Now, be glad they don't have, you know, death sentences for people that have the flu. What we have for people is you get herd immunity. You've heard that term before, of course, during COVID. Same thing would be true for chickens. I know a lot of small and medium chicken entrepreneurs, if you will, and they say, yeah, we get chicken flu. We don't kill all of our birds. They get over it.
The Biden White House was not judicious, mostly because they are government sycophants who have done nothing but government all their lives. There are two strains of the bird flu. One is something they get over. They get a cough, and maybe they have a little bit of molting problems, and their egg production goes down a little bit. The other one is dangerous, and you probably, unfortunately, do have to destroy the chickens because it is very difficult for them to get over, and most don't. But they weren't judicious about which strain it was. They just said, wipe them out. So now you have the same demand for eggs, but your supply chain has been destroyed. And so, of course, that's when costs go up. I mean, it's economics 101, something the people in the prior administration never really understood. But here's the thing, Steve, that I think is fascinating. Hakeem Jeffries came out on Friday talking about the high cost of eggs. And Trump had only been in office 4 days and 4.5 days. He never seemed to notice the high cost of eggs under the predecessor. I wonder why that was. Was he that obtuse?
Well, the same reason a lot of these people don't know, Ray. Look, these people sit up there, they are that obtuse because it doesn't affect them. The price of eggs, look, he's got an expense account as a member of Congress. He goes out for, gets a 10-egg omelet, he doesn't care. Doesn't care if it costs $50. He never sees that bill. It doesn't affect him. Doesn't impact his family. When he fills up a car with gas, if he's even capable, because a lot of these people don't drive. They have drivers. They have a security guy or two. They don't drive. They don't see the cost of gas. Again, it's expense account. It's something that's set up for them. I know because every member of Congress has an expense account that you and I get to pay for. That's the way it works. So the price of living in the hinterlands out here where I am or where you are doesn't occur to them because it doesn't impact them. And that's why Donald Trump is such an interesting figure, because he does understand the impact on the average individual. He does understand that groceries cost something, that it impacts the family budget, that inflation of 9% costs the American family, you know, $2,000 or $3,000 a month, and in some cases more, just to survive. So you had the inflation tax. He understood that. And he understood it to a point where he could associate that with the average voter, and that's one of the main reasons that he was able to and continues to identify and connect with American voters, because he is a guy who understands what they're facing and understands the challenges they're up against, which is why what has been so remarkable for the last 10 days are the 300 or so executive orders he's up to now have focused on policies that will improve the living condition, the future, the standard of living for the average American. He gets it. Hakeem Jeffries does not and will not. I mean, what do the Democrats stand for, Ray? Ask yourself, what is it that they stand for anymore? If anybody can tell me, I'll be here waiting. You can send me an email. Go to stevegerber.com. Drop me an email, because I'd love to understand what it is that Democrats actually stand for, except for hating Donald Trump.
Well, that's all they stand for, and that's really what this has been about ever since Trump came down the escalator. You know, before he came down that escalator in 2015, he was a beloved figure among the liberals. Anybody that is interested in what I've just said can go to opensecrets.org and look at the financial contributions that Democrats took from him. They loved this guy. He was a cash cow for them and for the Republicans as well. And then suddenly he decided to run for president as a Republican, and they wanted to call him Hitler. But the fact of the matter is, the Democrats in this country have no ideas that are advancing the cause of the average citizen who's struggling right now, working their butt off, trying to see a better day in their life. They have no ideas for that. And that's the other reason that they hate Donald Trump. He is promoting ideas that will advance not only our country, but our people.
That's right. He's advancing what we need, whether it's energy policy or policy of the border. And, you know, you keep seeing these people, what's her name, Selena Gomez, slobbering and blubbering like a child about some children that are being thrown out. I don't even know what she's talking about when she's talking about the deportations that are happening. Look, the deportations are what the American people voted for. We don't want murderers and rapists and child traffickers living in the same building that we're living in. It's pretty simple stuff. It's called law and order. It's very basic. And, in fact, one of the Tende Aragua monsters from Denver was arrested in New York City here yesterday or the day before. And the neighbors there said, we had no idea that kind of monster was living next to us. I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but that's it. Nobody wants that person in their building. Nobody. Even Democrats. That's why it's so bizarre, is that, you know, they act as if, well, these terrible things are happening. These people are being thrown out of the country. You know, who's going to grow our food and pick our food? Look, Stephen Miller pointed out quite aptly here with Jake Tapper, who's going to be thrown out of CNN before the end of the week, I think, potentially. Less than 1%, Ray, think about this. Less than 1% of the people that Joe Biden led into this country illegally work in agriculture. So this idea that somehow we're going to throw out the people that pick our food and da-da-da, it's all nonsense. It's all a red herring. It's all made up. These people live in New York City and Chicago and in Los Angeles. They don't work out in the fields picking anything. They're picking up their welfare check at the Roosevelt Hotel along with their free cell phone, but they're not picking tomatoes, I can tell you that.
Well, think about that argument, and it's so apropos from the Democrats. It is the same argument they made in the 1850s. If we end slavery, the cost of cotton will go through the roof. Everything will go up. This is always, they think so little of people. And so that argument, when I started hearing that very specious argument about picking the crops, I thought to myself, how can you stand there with a straight face and say that to people? How little do you think of folks? But they don't respect life. They don't respect liberty. What they look at is who can do something for me, and that's the only purpose for you to live. And it's a disgusting way to look at an American, and it's really awful that they allow these people. I mean, we got rid of the 13th. We got rid of slavery with the 13th Amendment 160 years ago this year, and we have so many of these people coming across the border. And most of them are coming here for reasons we can understand. They're leaving oppression, seeking a better life. Some are criminals, but they come across the border and then they get exploited by big business. And all these pointy-headed liberals have no problem with that. They have no problem with that. They are just perfectly fine with that, because the truth of the matter is, these people are nothing but political pawns for them. That's their only usefulness. And they look down on them.
And cheap labor. Now, you hit the nail right on the head, Ray, which is this. Your best argument if you're a Democrat, the best argument for the Democrats today of stopping the deportation of these people, well, they picked the blueberries that go in my smoothie. So the exploitation of these people, keeping them on the hook to do cheap labor, is the best excuse you have to keep these people in the country and not to deport them, is because you're trying to exploit them. That's awful. And that's what they're, they have no other argument. There is
Steve,
no
it's
other
their DNA.
Argument.
You know, they can't help it. Look, the country, the Democratic Party started with slavery, and then they went to secession. And when all of that failed, well, they couldn't stand it, so they went to segregation. And now they're trying a real social evil called socialism. But all the while, what is this about? It's about having someone they view as lesser than them doing a job that they don't want to do, and they don't care how they get paid for it or if they get paid for it, as long as the work gets done so that they can be better off themselves. These are not good people, and they may be God's child, but they make decisions and they make choices. These are exploiters of the human race, and I don't care for them.
I don't care for them either. And so let me just share something with you, if I may. Both parties deprecated war, but one of them would make war rather than let the nation survive, and the other would accept war rather than let the nation perish, and the war came. That was part of Abraham Lincoln's second inaugural address. It's in the Lincoln Memorial in Washington, D.C. Both parties deprecated war, but one would rather make war than let the nation survive. That has not changed since he uttered those words in 1865, and it is still true today, sadly.
I couldn't agree with you more. Lincoln is my favorite president. He always has been. When we were in D.C. recently, Dee Dee and I spent over 3 hours at Ford's Theater. I've been there many times, but she really wanted to absorb it, and I was so grateful to her for being willing to spend that time. Lincoln, if you read his writings throughout his life, you know, they've tried to turn him into, well, he really, you know, he didn't believe in black equality. He didn't believe in this, that, and the other. You know, Lincoln was the great emancipator. And Lincoln was absolutely right in what you just said. But there's another piece to that inauguration that had he been allowed to live, and again, 160 years ago, his life was taken. And I believe that life being taken by John Wilkes Booth has damaged us to this point.
I agree.
He said, with malice toward none and with charity toward all. And those are such powerful words.
They certainly are.
Coming from him specifically, and he had he been allowed to live, and his vision of the reunification of the country had been allowed to be put into place, we would not be here today. I believe that in all of my 200 and some odd pounds.
Right. Well, I think, let me read the entire, this is the last sentence of the address. With malice toward none and charity for all, with firmness in the right as God gives us to see the right, let us strive on to finish the work. We are in to bind up the nation's wounds, to care for him who shall have borne the battle, and for his widow and his orphan, to do all which may achieve and cherish a just and lasting peace among ourselves and with all nations. It's to bind up the nation's wounds. Again, malice toward none, charity for all, bind up the nation's wounds. Look after the widow. Look after the orphan. We were cheated badly by John Wilkes Booth, cheated badly. And then with, of course, Andrew Johnson and everything that followed.
I agree. I have long said this. Some people think I'm crazy, but I personally believe, and we've had many consequential moments, I believe the most consequential moment of the last 160 years was April 15th, 1865, because we were forever changed by that, and had the great man been allowed to live, I believe our nation would be in a very different spot. Because what you've had in the last 160 years is you've had a Democratic Party in this country who have used black people for their political purposes, and the black people that have been used resent it. But they've also been lied to, and the Democratic Party is very good at lying to people, the Republican Party not as good. So they have lied and said that we are the ones that want to oppress them. We are the ones that want to keep them back. They even lie about the fact that Martin Luther King was a Republican. They claim he was a Democrat. Some people teach in school. I've had students tell me Abraham Lincoln was a Democrat, or they go to the big lie that we may be Republicans and Democrats, but we switched. No, we didn't switch. We've always been liberators, emancipators, and believers in freedom for all.
Completely true. Could not possibly agree more. And it's been this long journey of Jim Crow laws and segregation and you know, Wallace for president and all of those things that have come in the last 160 years, that much of which would have been avoided. You know, you wouldn't have had Eisenhower sending the National Guard to Little Rock, Arkansas in 1957 if Lincoln had lived, I believe. And all of these
I agree. You know what? That's such a great point. That is a tremendous point. I believe you are absolutely right. I mean, my good Lord, these dadgum Democrats went to the United States Supreme Court with Plessy versus Ferguson because Homer Plessy simply wanted to ride in a decent rail car, for God's sakes. They couldn't even let a black man ride in a decent rail car, much less go to the bathroom or sit at the lunch counter. These Democrats have been oppressors from the moment they existed, and they still are today.
That has not changed. And you know, you look at Al Sharpton walking through Costco here a couple of days ago. Race hustler. You have to have victims in order to be a race hustler, right? And that's that. Jesse,
do you know why
Jack
he left?
Same.
Do you know why he left Costco?
Again.
Do you know why he left Costco when he left?
I don't.
Somebody handed him a job application.
Yeah.
I know. That was bad, wasn't it? That was bad. That was terrible. But I feel that way by him. I do.
I think he's detestable. I have no use for Al Sharpton. He is a kook and a dishonest one at that. And I put no value in him. None.
And yet the Democratic Party embraces him, has him at the White House, treats him like he's Martin Luther King. He is so far from Martin Luther King. He's as much like Martin Luther King as a dragon is a beetle.
Yeah.
You never heard that one before, did you?
I haven't. No, I'd absorbed it there for a second. But
I
yeah,
know.
I mean,
could hear that. I could hear those wheels turning.
Absorb it, but, you know, we can do so much better. That's why. This is why, Ray. Let me bring it full circle. This is why Donald Trump strikes fear into their hearts, because he doesn't see victims. He sees people.
Right.
He doesn't see problems. He sees possibilities.
Right.
He doesn't see a nation in decline. He sees a nation that can rebuild and restart its engines. That's what he sees. And that's why they are so fearful of him, because he believes in America first and make America great again and hope and the future. And so do I. And that's why it's a new day in America and a new golden age for America. And I am so proud to have played some tiny role in making that happen.
Yeah, I feel the same way. You said something so critically important here. He wants to see America rebuild itself. He wants to see our economy moving forward. He doesn't see people as victims. He sees them as human beings. When you have a prosperous economy, when your citizenry is flourishing, you cannot control people who have economic freedom. You can control the poor because you enslave them to the new plantation known as federal largesse. But prosperous people can't be controlled. The entire point of oppressing people from an economic standpoint by the Democratic Party is so they can control them. On a minor level, we're seeing it right here in the state of Maine with our Governor Janet Mills, and just the absolute words I won't use because I don't use of the manure that she has tried to sell the people. See if she wants to tax private ambulance services. So if you have a heart attack, you're having a baby, you get into a car wreck, they're going to tax the ambulance service that's taking you, driving up the cost. They want to tax prescription drugs. There's only two states in the country that currently do it. She is basically, and she calls it revenue, as though it's like they've earned the money. They're confiscating it forcibly. They are harming our state. But if our people are poor, she and her Democratic cohorts can control them. That's what this is all about.
Yeah, it is what it's all about. I look forward to, I can't even believe they're going to tax your medicine?
Yeah. I mean, she is so hungry for revenue. She's the greatest spender in all of Maine history. She took our budget from $7.5 billion in, when she took office 6 years ago. It's going to be 11.6, and then next year, this time, when she does a supplemental, because they claim we have to spend the money, will be at $12 billion. And it's all about government, and it's not about the people who earn the money, the people that she and her cohorts of crazy people are supposed to serve. They're not serving anyone but themselves.
Unbelievable.
What kind of depraved mind taxes sick people or people that have had an accident that must be transported to the hospital? What kind of depraved mind does something like that?
I'm sitting here thinking ambulance services are going bankrupt around the country.
Absolutely.
Every day. And so are rural hospitals every day. And
every
you're going
day.
To go ahead and tax these people that are not even surviving. I mean, to me, that is inconceivable, frankly.
Yes, it is inconceivable. Yes, that's a good word. We have got to run, my friend. But I look forward to our next encounter.
You.
Yeah. Well,
all right. I look forward to it, my friend.
I appreciate you as well, and I appreciate your wife and your sister-in-law. We are looking forward to seeing you guys somewhere here very soon. And looking very forward to other things that might be happening.
Thank you, Ray.
Absolutely. Steve, good to talk to you. Thank you.
You too.
We'll be right back. Just give us a couple of minutes. We'll answer some phone calls. At Community Pharmacy, we are Maine's largest Maine-owned and Maine-operated pharmacy. With 8 convenient locations and 70 trusted employees that live in your community, you can count on us because you know us. Go to communityrx.com to find out more. This Channel 8 newscast is brought to you by Dirigo Public Affairs. They take pride in making sure they create a customized strategy